Boom, 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 boom. Welcome back to another episode of The Last Storm. My name is Mark. I'm back with Dave. We're here to talk about the Thunder. And, well, we got a couple of things to talk about on the day of the playing game where we face the Pelicans. We've talked a lot about the Pelicans. If you guys want to hear what we have to say about that, check it out. There's a ton of people talking about this matchup. It's exciting. But overall, when you look back and you say, what are we going to be talking about in 20 years from now? We're really talking about how Sam Presti redefined the rebuild.
Yeah, and this all begins in, Mark, was it Vermont, the mountains of Vermont?
Yeah, that's our legend. That's how we like to go.
So we like to tell a story as if it was like, man, what was that guy in Alaska that was named Sam?
I know the story, but I can't remember about the name of the...
Gosh, it was a poem our granddad used to read to
Sam
us every Christmas.
Yeah, there you go.
Sam McGee, right?
Cremation of Sam McGee.
The story of Sam McGee, guys. And to us, that's how we like to tell the story, is because when Sam separated himself from the rest of the world and got into the mountains and the forest of Vermont, in a way got lost because he recognized life was changing. Things as he knew it was changing, and he was either going to be on board, right, with that change and embrace the change, or he was going to go down with the ship. And the going down with the ship was, you know, basically holding on to every single one of these players until they were older and they were done, and not trading them and trying to go for, you know, another win and another win and another win and never getting there. Or he could look at the strength of the draft over the next coming 3-4 years and pretty much make the prediction that this is the way to go. Because if I draft this way and I draft properly, I can make this rebuild happen in 2 or 3 years. And what's happened is it's pretty much three seasons, 2.5 years, but the seasons are all whack because of COVID. So if you think about it, Sam has completed the rebuild in 3 seasons. And if you think about that in history, when has a team done that? When you talk about complete rebuild, like what we have Dort and Shea from the original squad there. When I say the original squad, we're talking about the Chris Paul squad, right? The first teardown part, okay? That's it, guys. We got nobody left from it, the rest of it. And why is that important? Well, it's been important because those guys are the ones who are saying, hey, listen, this is where we can be at, right? When I say this is where we can be at, top five in the West is where I think that we can be at next year. So that's what's important for this team to understand, is the push now. And I understand what Sam Presti has done on a whole new level, because we've been sitting here and dissecting it and looking at the draft picks and looking at how many he's accumulated and recognizing that there's a good chance that Houston is going to suck next year. Rockets are going to suck, man. Fuck. The Houston Rockets are going to suck, right? If they suck, we got a pick from them that's only top four protected. Think about that, guys. We could have another lottery pick next year, no matter how we finish. Okay. Like, that's why I keep on going back to this over and over and over again. Like, what Sam has done is looked at the future and said, this will do well here. This will return better here. I will make a trade with this team right here because, in my opinion, Kawhi and PG-13 won't stay healthy enough for a season for them to be atop of the West. And guess what? He bet right. If he had sent PG-13 and Russ and everybody else, right? Let's just say Kawhi had stayed in Toronto, okay? And he had sent those three guys pretty much to Toronto, keeping Kawhi there. They would have had, what, 2 or 3 championships? You know, like, that's what I'm saying, is like what Sam did was he recognized and wagered his success and other teams' failures in the future and now. And he's bet so correctly so far. I mean, think about it. Got J-Dub. I mean, what, if that's all we get from mm-hmm. them, that's perfect. But he got J-Dub after he got Shea.
Right.
Like, we can keep going down this, guys. And the list is going to continue to go.
And, well, I like what you're saying because, you know, you look at all these guys, and most of the guys that we've been able to succeed in, you know, somebody mentioned we should call it a retool instead of a rebuild, and I like that.
Oh, I love that. Some guy said that, but it was perfect,
right,
man.
But, like, most of the people that we have been able to be successful with the exception really of just Josh Giddey. You know, we've been able to make it back to the play-in, or make it to the play-in for the first time, but back to the postseason with just one player from our own drafting, from being, you know, at the, you know, top 10 picks or number six.
Because you can't count Chet right now.
So everybody else has been a product of the retooling or of the teardown, however you want to call it. And that's so important to understand is, like, then you have a player like Chet who will be coming in and he'll be able to build on top of what we already have. Whereas you look at a player like Joel Embiid, where the process Sixers were able to get, like, one good player, maybe two if you count Ben Simmons whenever, you know, he was, you know, balling. But, like, then they had to be the guys that they had to build everything around. Whereas having someone like Chet come in after Shea and Giddy and J-Dub are already successful and still owning our own picks, like you said, and having future picks in the lottery that are on their way, both from Houston and from the Clippers and from anything else that comes up, because there's going to be a lot of opportunities for us to, you know, for players that we don't want to extend to send other places. And as we talked about in previous episodes, the increased importance of the CBA and the draft as it pertains to teams once they're trying to contend. We've been saying this for a long time, but it seems like it resonates even more true now that we're not going to package all of our picks to go get a player. Those picks are ultimately equivalent to
how you build.
Yeah, but once you've already become great or become the top of the league, how you stay great. Your ability to infuse talent into your team. If you just go give those away for a single infusion of talent, then you're going to miss out long run.
I mean, think about this. When was the Warriors' first championship? Right? It's been like 7 years,
yeah,
8 years?
Yeah, 2015, I think.
Yeah, something like that. 8 years, 9 years, whatever. Think about that, guys. That is the normal span of what I would consider a dynasty. If you think about the Bulls, you know, really 90 through 96, 97, whatever. So, you know, maybe 98, whatever. You had this time period where it's about 8 years. What Sam Presti's trying to do, guys, is he's not trying to make it an 8 year time period. Think about that. He's trying to make it a 16-year time period. So by trading all the assets you've already accumulated, and for the next 7 years, the most valuable assets in the NBA are going to be draft picks for the next 7 years, because it's going to be how you are able to, you know, round your team off. And you don't have to go get junk players to round off your with your superstars. But teams are going to have to be able to, like, dude, teams like the Lakers are going to have superstars and then just play pure shit. Like, guys that would not even make other teams, mm-hmm. right? And it's just going to be, that's how it's built. And then you look at teams like the Thunder that are going to be like, okay, we're going to take this player in the draft, and we're going to take this player. Oh, we're going to pick up three players from the draft this year. You know, like, why are they Thunder doing that? Well, they're getting rid of some players. They're moving some players off the board, and they're starting to retool within a small time period. Because we've seen what happens when Sam Presti decides to retool. It takes him 3 years. So if we know this, it only takes him 3 years. When the time period that comes that Shea's getting to that age that I would like to say Sam Presti's looking to move him at 31, 32 years old, where he's becoming an old player, if Sam Presti wants to move him at that age and not keep him, and so we build statues of Shea in Oklahoma City, right? And he wants to retool by the draft picks that he'll be able to receive from Shea, then guess what? He'll be able to do that. And then push our limit out yet again for another 8 years.
All right, now you
and that's what's
now
so
you're
impressive.
Bother some people by talking about that, but in the end, that's.
But what we're talking about, you know, 8-9 years down the road, guys. And yes, I never want to trade Shea, right? I want him to retire
but that's
in
how
Oklahoma
it ended
City
with Russ too. Let's just face it.
Yeah, let's just face it though. Like, Sam Presti has given us a template of what's going to happen. He sends players where they want to go later in their career, whether it's Chris Paul to the Suns. Thank you for the couple of years you gave Oklahoma. Actually, 3 years you gave Oklahoma City, right?
You count his first.
He did it for PG-13. Yeah. He sent him where he wanted to go. Sent Russ to Houston because that's where Russ wanted to go. You know, like, this is what Sam does. Like, a player says, "Hey, I've spent 10 years in this organization, 11 years in this organization. I really appreciate everything you've done, but me and my family really want to have some time in blank." You know, like, a team just opened up in blank, and we want to go there. And you know, Sam Presti will sit him down and be like, "You know what? I told you if you ever wanted to go, I would sit down and help you go." And that's what Sam Presti's done. He has changed the way that he has been GM. You cannot say, "Hey, I own your right for 4 years." You don't have any say in it. For the next 4 years, you work for my team, because that shows like a place of ownership. That's old NBA.
Right. Isn't that kind of what took down the Bulls in a way in so many different things?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, you don't do that. Like, now you're like, hey, listen, let's work with each other. Sam Presti understood that. He changed the style of how a GM acts because you work with a player. Because why do you work with a player? Because players are all connected somehow. They all talk. They all tell each other what's up. And if Sam Presti is the one guy that sends players where they want to go, guess what Al Horford's going to do when he wants to be traded? Hey, I'd like to go to Oklahoma City. Why? Because I'm going to go to Oklahoma City, play maybe half a year, and Sam Presti's going to send me where I want to go next year. Dude, this is what needs to happen. Like, players are going to start recognizing what Sam Presti is doing for them. They're going to start recognizing it. And yes, that means that some players in the organization will have to take discounts to come here and stay here. But this is not going to be a James Harden situation where all of a sudden we're turning down a player because of $5 million a year. Guess what happened with James Harden? We all know now. James Harden was a nutcase.
And he wanted to go.
When it comes to controlling the locker room.
Yeah.
Right? We all know that now. But at that time, we didn't know. We didn't know that James Harden was probably going to take down Russ and KD way before the end was inevitable. Sam saw that, though. And I love the aspect of what James Harden brought to us. But now looking back and recognizing that there's a certain attitude, there's a certain mentality, there's a certain way of holding yourself in the organization. And if you don't have it, you don't have it. If you don't want it, you don't get it. You get the fuck out of here. Because this organization is about professionalism. Teaching players how to be professional athletes, guys. And you think that's easy, right? How many first-round draft picks don't make it every single year?
The majority.
Because they're not in the right organization.
Right. I mean, you're hitting it on the head, dude.
People don't give a shit about development.
And when you adjust things and when you look at the totality of what you're talking about not just like the effects of Sam Presti, you know, changing the way things are rebuilt, but also the way that players interact with management. Because if it is seen as a competitive advantage for the Thunder to work with players, you better believe other teams are going to want to copy that competitive advantage. And then you have this ripple effect where the league becomes more player friendly, which it always should be. It should always be moving more toward player-friendly status. So
always.
It's one of those things that...
It's respect, right, man.
To me, it leads us into kind of the second thing we want to talk about, because we want to talk about things that we learned from this season that will be true in the future, right? If no matter what, if we win or lose this game. And what we just talked about is one of those things where it's like, if it doesn't matter if we win or lose, Sam Presti's already changed how this goes, not just... The Thunder were always seen as a great place to develop talent. But going to what you're saying about the time in Vermont and like him reassessing and really reimagining the Thunder, and what we're seeing is the actualization of that vision. And
yeah,
what does that mean for like on the court, for the players, for the team, for Coach Daigneault? What are some of the things that we can learn from this season? And what I think, starting with Coach Daigneault, and then I'll let you go, but I just learned that he has an elite offense and a sophisticated defense, and he knows how to deploy them based on his personnel at the highest level. And I think he's an asset to the team, and I really appreciate what he brings.
You know, beginning of the season, I felt like Coach D, his biggest weakness as a coach was in-game changes, in-game decision-making changes, right? And I felt like that was not a knock on him, but that's every young coach's issues, right? And how to listen to the assistant coaches to see what they're having to say. He has changed, Coach D has changed that, in my opinion, to becoming one of the best coaches in the league at making game time decisions and changes, especially when it comes to the fourth quarter. And that's where I start take a step back and saying, like, we saw from the first year that he was coaching the defensive improvement, the second year, the offense improvement, right? The third year, game time decisions, and yes, defense got better. Yes, offense got better. I think we're like top 10 in almost every single statistic out there, right? Bro, it's elite. And this is not just because of the players. And I want to say that with all due respect to our players, like, we have elite players. But you can have elite players all you want, but if you don't have the discipline in the game, they're just running around with their like chickens with their heads cut off. And what Coach D is able to do is able to say, you know, put your blinders on, guys, you know, like, you know, horses, right? Get your blinders on. Nothing else matters except what's in front of you right now. Focus on it. Understand it, right? And when you do it so much, it becomes habit. So when Shea is taking a shot at the end of the game, last shot, it's habit for him. Why? Because that's what he's doing in practice every single day, right? Coach is saying, hey, 10 seconds left on the clock. We're running through this strategy. 10 seconds left on the clock. We're running through this strategy. This type of defense, this type of offense. This is what Coach D has changed, in my opinion. He has changed the atmosphere that's in the Oklahoma City Thunder locker room, practice facilities, and everything else. And when you do that, and you see the positivity that's coming out of it, it's really powerful. And I understand that people are going to knock on Coach D because of this or that, but I'm telling you guys, as a 38-year-old man, he's exactly where he needs to be as a coach. He's learning quickly, he's absorbing it, and he's making the changes that need to be made every single year. And you can see it by the improvement of these players, and you see it in the improvement of the defense and the offense and the way we understand the game. It's elite. And that's why Coach D has made so many improvements this year. And I'm so excited about next year. But the reality is that without the players that he has and without the desire, like the Sam Presti has drafted these players and brought them in that have the desire to learn and do whatever it takes for the team to win, Sam would never be there. Coach D would never be there. These guys are guys that they put their trust in for the organization. And what are these young men doing right now? They're showing everybody what they can do, what Shea can do, what J-Dub can do. They're flexing right now. And people are sitting there saying, there's no way that this team should beat the Pelicans. You know, there's no way that this team should beat Minnesota, okay? And then you're hearing, if Oklahoma City even gets to the first round, there's no way that they're going to go even bring it to, you know, game six against Denver. And to me, that's inspiring because I believe in this team, man. I think that this team can not only win the next two games, but put themselves in a position that they can scare the living shit out of Denver. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the NBA be like, what's happening in Oklahoma City? You know, because nobody else understands it right now. Nobody thinks that the Oklahoma City's Thunder is any good. They're like, oh, yeah, they just limped in because why? Dallas lost it. That's what I hate, because it null and voids all the work these young men have done this season by saying Dallas, they tanked. Fuck that. That's why I wanted to win the last game. That's why I wanted this team to prove that they belonged there. You know, like that's what this team needed. And I look at this and now they have an opportunity to say, fuck you guys. We're better than you think. And Dallas only lost because they suck.
Yeah, dude. I dig it, man. And I dig the appreciation you have for the effort that these guys put up, because in the reality, no matter how you slice it, we won 40 games. And the only game that 40. We didn't face up against a team that was, you know, trying absolutely to win was when a team that we against Memphis, where we put out our, you know, third unit also. So it was completely, you know, it was 39 wins by our starters. And you love what that means. And we love how that leads us into, you know, this game against the Pelicans and really how Coach Degnall is going to handle the situation. Willie Green on the other sideline, and he's someone that has won in this environment last year. The Pelicans were able to, you know, get into the playoffs from the play-in game. And you look at it and, like, we're trying to be the upstart team that can, you know, let everybody know that this is our rival. And that's the path we want to take. And we play a team that's experienced in that. How much does their experience, you know, give them an advantage in this type of game?
Well, I think everything experiences everything in the playoffs. But to me, you know, with their experience, we have experience in Shea and Dort. You know, they've been there. You know, they played against Houston in, what was it, 6 or 7 games, whatever it was. Like, they've been in the big game situation. You know, you don't think Dort learned from that? I mean, like, I guarantee you, he knows exactly how to step up the level. So if it wasn't for those two guys and the fact that Dario has played in the minutes, I would say it's a huge advantage. But the reality is that our two best players, best players in their positions, a.k.a., you know, defense and offense, right? Dort and Shea have already got that experience. And I think that's going to really help the team really solidify, because we already follow Shea. We already followed Dort, and those two guys are leading it. So the experience that I would typically say that the Pelicans have, in my opinion, is not an, a bonus at this point.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. They might have like a little bit of loss of that edge when you've already gone through this experience. And there's an opportunity for us here to, like you said, shock the world. Whereas the Pelicans, they did that last year. So now if they beat us, it's what everybody expects. So it's an opportunity.
You got to step up. You got to step up to the occasion. And if you don't step up to the occasion, you have no place there. And I think that's the key of that, is that the Oklahoma City Thunder, they all know. Coach D knows. You listen to it in the locker room. You listen to it in the interviews right now. They all know that's the spot they got to step up. Well, guess what the Pelicans are probably thinking? We got to do what we did last time.
And
there's a difference,
yeah,
man.
It's like going down, going into the locker room down one at halftime. Well, you know, you're not down that much, and you feel like you have to fix everything. And that's, we're approaching this hungry. That's going to give us the edge.
We want it.
We want it bad, bro. So I don't even have to ask you
tonight
who you think is going to win, because we always answer the same way every single time.
I want to say this, though. I want to say this. I think I think it's going to come down to I really think that Shai is going to hit a shot to win the game. But if you don't think that Shai's going to hit it, then look for J-Dub's tip-in,
so,
baby.
Here's what I want to say. I want to ask you right before we get out of here, right? If you were to pick one strategic adjustment, I already have one in mind, so I'll go first. The kind of a surprise thing. I think Coach has learned you can't leave Dort on Brandon Ingram. So we're going to see a huge shift to it be mostly J-Dub on Brandon Ingram. And he might score 40, but we're going to leave Dub on an island with Ingram all game. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right about that, because you got CJ in the pocket. And if CJ goes off on you, you're going to get beat. So who's going to guard CJ?
Dort. Mm-hmm.
So you got two big players right there. I wouldn't be surprised if Coach puts Shai on Brandon Ingram as well. Share the load for J-Dub, especially if Brandon Ingram starts going off. I think Shai will have to step up and play that position. And Shai, we know he can play some crazy defense. So I look for that. I also think that I want to say the biggest adjustment we need to make, right, is we need to get Valachunas, whatever
JV.
His name is. JV, there we go. Jonas, we need to get his ass in foul trouble early in this game, because he always kills us on the offensive on boards. I know Jackson Hayes is sitting in there in the wings right now, but the reality is that we need to get VJ, JV, whatever his name is, off the board. So that's what we need to happen.
VJ.
I think we need to attack the hole, get
to
the hole.
We're going to turn JV into VJ.
But JJ. Keep the JJ off the boards, baby. All right. So the thing about the Pelicans, right, is you can understand that their defense and their offense is good. In the most cases, they're really good.
But if you can throw them out of their initial actions, if you can disrupt their point of attack,
if you can make them understand that there are bitches, they have nothing else they can do. And what they will do is they will literally collapse. I mean, think about what happened with the Timberwolves, man. The Timberwolves is a perfect example of how you don't play a game, okay? A dude breaks his hand by punching a wall. You've got two other dudes that are fighting on the bench, and then they continue in the locker room, like big-time fighting, like brawling
out
in the locker room.
And the Pelicans couldn't beat them.
And then the Pelicans still couldn't beat them. And it was a close game, and they still couldn't come together to beat them. What does that mean? That means that there's no fucking heart sometimes. And when you don't have heart, and you don't want to see it, and you don't want to win it, man, it just is like, blah. Like, listen, you know you're in trouble when you get outplayed by the Lakers and you get outplayed by the Timberwolves in a fucking week, because you're ahead of all those teams a little bit ago. And now all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, dude, they don't want to win and they're trying to get close enough to the top 10 they possibly can get right now, or they just don't give a shit about anything. And I want to say, I don't think they give a shit.
Well, what if they do give a shit and they just can't get their shit together? Because that's what it looks like probably since Christmas, that time period.
Like, it's a coaching mentality at this point.
Well, maybe, but like they have good players, right? I mean, I really like Trey Murphy. I like Herb Jones. I like Brandon Ingram. CJ can ball. But in the end, what I see is a team that if you punch them in the mouth, they crumble. And they need to land the first punch if they're going to be able to stand up. And if you're talking about a heavyweight matchup, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The key is with a team like this is you land the first punch, you get their back against the wall. And I don't think they're going to stand up. What do you think? Come on, be honest. Like, we're not going to release this because this is we like to be respectful to our opponents.
And when you're fucking the shit out of somebody and you come inside of them, right? You release billions of sperm cells, right, man? And sometimes when you meet somebody, you're like, what the fuck? How did that sperm cell beat the rest of the billion out? Like, what the fuck is wrong with them? You know, like, and I look at it like when you have an athlete that's a true athlete that could be one of the world's best athletes that just proves that he just sometimes they don't care. And I'm not saying one person in particular with the Pelicans, but it's proven.
Hang on. Are you saying Brandon Ingram reminds you of Tracy McGrady?
I'm saying that Brandon Ingram is the closest thing we've had to Tracy McGrady since Tracy McGrady.
Dude, they both look so stoned out there.
So
and
stoned.
I respect stoners.
And I listen, like, and I think it's one of those things where when you're playing at a high level and you're like, you know what, like, I'm cool with just going out there and being relaxed. That's cool. But then you see how Shea goes out there and plays in the fourth quarter. You see how Dort plays in the fourth quarter. And you see how J-Dub and Josh Giddey and all these other guys are playing in the fourth quarter. Like, there's a difference.
I heard the Pelicans took a day off. They didn't practice on one of the days. So they only got one practice.
And then you heard what Zion said, right?
Right.
Like Zion's pretty much come out and was like, nah, I don't want to work out. I'm not going to work out. I'll play when I'm ready. And it's like, dude, I get it. You just signed this massive deal, but that's the last money you'll ever get in the NBA if this is your mentality.
So, like, you're saying they're a secret dumpster fire. And here's the thing. They could have been the fifth seed going into the final game day, and they slipped all the way to the ninth. But if everything had gone their way, they could have been the fifth seed. But it seems like the team that was finishing up the season isn't really the team that earned that ranking. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, you see the implosion of what happened with Dallas. And as much as I don't want to say that about the Pelicans, it's exactly about the Pelicans, man. The implosion that's happened at the end of the season, I think, has everything to do with, if you look at the future of the draft, like, this is pretty much the last really strong year. I mean, yeah, you can say, oh, well, this year is going to be good at this part. This year is going to be good at this part. But there's not going to be another draft where you're going to have 12, 14 players strong in the draft for a couple of years. So I think there's teams like Dallas that are like, fuck it. Top 10, we get to keep our pick. I think you see Pelicans being like, fuck it. Keep our pick. You know, like, I think this is what's happening, man. I think we're seeing this in real life of what teams look like when they fucking tank. Because the Pelicans get top 11, man. 12. I think they get 12. Think about that. Number 12. And they're thinking, well, 12's not that bad because J-Dub came out of that. If we could get J-Dub on this team.
Dude,
it's too late, though.
The Pelicans, they got Dyson Daniels, who was drafted earlier in the draft. So it's not like, and I like Dyson, but
listen,
J-Dub is
that team,
next level.
If you trade out Brandon Ingram and CJ, right?
Yeah.
And Valachunas, okay? You trade out those three guys, and you go straight up young talent.
I know. I like
straight to the draft. Like, you can have that team in good shape in a year and a half.
Yeah, you look at Herb Jones, Trey
otherwise,
Murphy,
they're fucked,
building
bro.
Building blocks right there, man.
They're fucked. If they're buying in on Brandon Ingram, they're buying in on CJ, they're buying in on Valanciunas. Like,
they're waiting around for Zion. And I get, like, the temptation. But,
trade
dude,
Zion. You can get two first rounds for him right now.
Build around those guys, but they're not. And in the end, you know that coming into this game, there are two players who are going to get the majority of the shots. It's going to be Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum.
And Valachunas.
Maybe
DJ.
Early. They might go to him early, like, just for, like, a couple passes. But, like, in the end, he's going to have to, like, work his ass off on the boards to get his 20 and 10. He might be able to pull that off because of the size. But I have a sense that we could play him off the court, you know, just by stretching the court with Jay Will hitting a couple of threes and making him play out of position. But, like, man, yeah, we might lose this game. But it doesn't change the fact that the Pelicans suck right now.
Yeah. One in a billion shot at surviving in life. Don't waste it, man. Just remember that. Like, it's the common sense in the world that we live in. You don't waste your fucking talent. And guess what? If you're getting high all the time on your own supply, you're wasting your fucking talent. And I'm just being honest.
I mean, depends on your goals in life, right?
I mean, yeah. If you're like James Harden in the aspect of I'm going to strip clubs every single night, you know, like, but by all means, go waste $1 million in a year at a strip club. That's your prerogative. Not everybody is like
at the point where they'll do anything to win a championship.
Dude, I listen. You see teams that are so hungry to win. Then you see players that are so hungry to win. And you're like, when they mix, you know, it's like, boom, this team's going to be good. Right? That's what Oklahoma City is all about. It's mixing. Everybody's seeing it mixed. You're seeing a team like the Pelicans where it's just like every single time they have a big game or big opportunity to do well, it's like they're just a few franchises short of a fucking Happy Meal, bro. And it's so obvious. It's just like I don't get it. I don't get it why you wouldn't just stop and recognize we've got three players that are good that we can get massive hauls through. Let's trade them. Let's get rid of them. Let's get 7-8 picks for these guys, and let's rebuild this team and this organization right away. We already have the young talent we need to start off. We have it like the Oklahoma City Thunder do. We have the young, quote-unquote, star coming up. Like, utilize that. Like, I don't get it. Maybe that's just because I see how Sam Presti has laid out the process, and every GM wants to do it their way. But when you're seeing things change and the GMs aren't changing, you're like scratching your head saying, don't you see what we're seeing? Or are you just so blind that you don't give a shit about what's happening in the NBA? As long as I stick to my plan, we'll be okay and playoff contender. Sam's like, fuck the normal plan and being a playoff contender. I want to be a championship contender. And I think that's the difference in the mix up what's happening with the NBA right now is people are so concerned about being playoff contenders, they're forgetting that there's a fucking championship on the line.
Dude, we got to beat two teams that are reeling, the Pelicans and the Wolves. We can do it. And if we do, we get extended playoff time, baby. So, boom.
One in a billion, baby.
Don't waste your shot. All right, so what do we got to do now? I guess we got to close it out because that's it, bro. Where else are we going to go from here, dude? We hope that you guys are going to join us. We're going to be live.
Live tonight, baby.
I just got my first coffee of the day. We're going early. We hope to get this episode up a little bit early. We hope you guys are having a great day. We know how much this means to all of you. It's a special day. Win or lose, we should all just appreciate the moment. And personally, I'm going to watch the game twice because it helps me because I get so, like, I get emotionally tied up, and it's hard to actually really appreciate the moment. So I'm going to go back and watch the game a second time afterwards. I hope you guys do, too, because this should be special.
Yeah. And listen, guys, make sure you tell somebody you love them. Make sure you tell someone to fuck off today, all right?